The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Welcome again. So my name is Marjolein Janssen. I am from the Netherlands, and I live in the U.S. That's where the accent and the weird name is from. Very happy to be here with some of you here in person and some online through YouTube. And for those who celebrate, happy Valentine's Day. And I want to thank also the volunteers who make it possible for us to be here in person at IMC and who make it possible for the recording and the YouTube stream. So, big bow for the volunteers. Thank you. And today, I'd like to talk about four ways, four helpful, supportive ways that that we can use in our practice, both on and off the cushion. And I came up with those supports a while ago when I was doing a retreat. And they were very helpful reminders for me to stay balanced and stay on course on the path towards a more easeful, a more wholesome, a more free life. And I still use them regularly in my practice. And so I thought I'd share them and hope that they are also of use to you, or at least maybe one of them. So I'll briefly mention them first before I dive deeper into each of them. And the first might be familiar, which is mindfulness. And mindfulness is, of course, the ability to be aware of what is happening while it is happening. And then the second support I'd like to talk about is relaxation. Because if we can relax a little bit in our often stressful lives, this can be very helpful. And I will give some tips and tools on how to do that. And then the third support is kindness. And I'd like to specifically focus on kindness towards ourselves, because I think that's something that in our society is often difficult, while it is vital for our well-being. And then the fourth support will be return to the present moment. So we all recognize when we're in meditation, we just go off lost in thoughts of past or future. And just a simple reminder to be in the present moment can be very helpful. So mindfulness, relaxation, kindness, and returning to the present moment. So first, mindfulness. The Buddha says in the suttas, mindfulness is always useful. So we can never go wrong by being mindful. It's a very special quality of mind if you think about it, because it really helps us to be aware of things. We see what is happening while it is happening. There's not really another aspect of our mind that can do that. And most people live in their lives without really knowing, without really being present for what is here right now, what is happening in our body and mind. And we live mostly out of old patterns and conditionings and tendencies that we cultivated through our life in our childhood and later on in life, without really knowing that we're doing that. One of the simple example in my own life is that I used to be super aversive towards cleaning. Like if I had to clean my house, I was like, oh, I have to go clean again, and it's really, really needed again, and I really don't want to do it. And I was like, days and days would build up, like, oh, I really need to clean, and I really don't want to. And then when I was actually cleaning, I was still aversive towards the cleaning. I was like, I really want to do something else. I really don't like this. And through mindfulness practice, I started recognizing that better enough aversion towards cleaning. And I became aware of like, maybe this is actually not so useful. Maybe this is actually painful to be aversive the whole time. And I had to see it maybe like 100 times before it started to shift a little bit towards like letting it go and being more present and just finding it a bit more neutral to clean. And sometimes I now even like it. Sometimes it's even just a pleasant way of being mindful of the body. So it can actually change. So mindfulness can really help us to see all these old patterns, these conditionings that we tend to live from. And we might find very unhelpful, unwholesome patterns and tendencies that are based on greed or aversion or delusion. Delusion sometimes also called confusion. So it's very useful to keep an eye out for like, oh, is there any greed or wanting in the mind? Is there any aversion? Is there any confusion present? But we can also find very helpful and wholesome states of mind when we start being mindful. Like patterns that are based on generosity, on compassion, on wisdom. So if we find those kind of patterns, that is very useful to see, because if we savor them, if we acknowledge them, then they strengthen and they become more. So it's a very good thing to really acknowledge those kind of patterns and tendencies as well. So as you understand, probably this mindfulness, sati in Pali, can really help us gain insight into our own minds. Insight into what is governing our lives, those patterns and tendencies. And maybe another super simple example is when we just start meditation, then we find out like, oh, the mind thinks a lot. I didn't know that, like how much the mind is thinking. So that's just these tiny little simple things that we can notice. And seeing these patterns is, of course, not always pleasant. We often see things that are not so pleasant. But Sylvia Boorstein is a meditation teacher. She says, mindfulness meditation doesn't change life. Life remains as fragile and unpredictable as ever. Mindfulness meditation changes the heart's capacity to accept life as it is. End quote. So mindfulness can help us to grow this heart's capacity to be with both the pleasant and the unpleasant, to really have the capacity to be with what is. Mindfulness itself is a non-judgmental presence for life. For mindfulness, it doesn't really matter what happens. Mindfulness itself doesn't have a judgment or doesn't need anything to be different than it is. It's just seeing life as it is in this present moment. So in a way, we can learn to be not so reactive anymore and not necessarily want things to change. Not necessarily want to push it away or pull it towards us, but just to be there with it, just to open to whatever it is, however difficult it might be. I do have to say that it's a training. It's not something that's like in an instant, like we can do that. Sometimes we just need some time in this process. So it can be useful to practice with easy things first. That we don't start with the biggest thing in our life, to open to that, but to start with maybe something small, like if someone cuts you on the highway and you feel anger coming up, that you start with that anger. Or when you have an itch during your meditation and you don't want to move, so you feel the irritation of the itch. that kind of thing might be useful. And then slowly we will build some resilience. And bit by bit, we have more and more capacity to be with difficult things. So patience is really important in this process. Really see it as a gradual learning process. And I do want to say that we sometimes need to back off. Sometimes it's just overwhelming with what we experience, and it's just too much. And then it can be just really skillful to turn away from what we experience, to turn the attention away. It can be also very skillful and wholesome at times. That's an important side note to what I'm saying. But in the cases that it's not overwhelming and super difficult, then when we do open to difficulty, then to help us get a little bit motivated, we could ask ourselves, like, do we want to live in ignorance, or do we want to know what's happening, even if it's maybe not so pleasant? Because only when we know what is happening can we change it. And can we work towards a more wholesome way of living with a bit less reactivity, maybe? So when we know, we can start to learn from it and gain wisdom. And we can practice this knowing of what is happening, both in formal meditation as well as in our daily lives. And especially in daily life, we can see those patterns and conditionings that govern our lives and our activities. We can see simple things, maybe like craving for coffee in the morning, or that we see that when we say hello to our neighbor, that it's actually coming from our kind heart. Or we see the change of mood during the day, from energized to down to at ease to stressed. We can see all sorts of interesting things. So when we start to see more and more, know more and more about our own minds and hearts, then we start to develop more and more wisdom and skillfulness in our lives. And one of my teachers, Saido Uteshaniya, talks about that there's this wisdom part in the mind. That wisdom is like this separate part in the mind, just like anger and love. They're all like little entities in itself in the mind, and then those can grow or weaken, hopefully with anger, for example. And then when we start to see things with mindfulness, then the wisdom part of our minds can start to learn from that. And one way of learning would be that what we see, and what we're going to see, is that what leads to happiness and freedom and peace, and what leads to suffering. And that's a very important thing to start seeing. Like what I realized with the cleaning, that my response of being super aversive towards cleaning was actually not leading to happiness, but was contributing to more and more suffering in my life. So we start to see the painful habits and then start to let go of it, because wisdom starts to let go of it. Wisdom is the part of the mind that can let go. It's not us that lets go. So we don't necessarily meditate to get rid of a problem, but a more helpful way to see is that we meditate to start to understand and to learn and to gain wisdom. So in this way, you can make mindfulness your whole path, your whole life becomes your path, because it becomes this fertile ground for wisdom. That's what I wanted to say about mindfulness. And then the second support I'd like to talk about is relaxation. Maybe you recognize that sometimes you sit down for relaxation, for mindfulness or for meditation, and you just sit there and you do your thing, but you don't really start anywhere. You just sit there. So what often is very helpful is when we have a little bit of a beginning when we start our meditation. And one of the things we can do to start would be to relax. Because when we deliberately relax, then it will condition the next moment and the next moment. So every moment conditions the next moment. So if we deliberately relax, then that helps us in our meditation. So we can also relax during daily life. We don't have to wait till we sit down for meditation. Anytime you think about it, you can relax. When you drive to work, or when you're in the bathroom, or when you're eating, whenever you think about it. But how do we do that? How do we relax? Like, the first easy thing to do is to relax the body, because the body and the mind are connected. So if you consciously relax your body, then it will affect your mind as well. And one way to relax the body is to do a body scan. So you just go through the body and just touch on with your attention on each part of the body. And often this little bit of attention for the body already relaxes the body. And sometimes a direct invitation to the body helps the body to relax. So you can say, may the body relax. Or if we have certain tensions in certain parts of the body, we can invite those parts to relax. Like the shoulders maybe, or the forehead, or the little muscles around the eyes sometimes get tense. And sometimes just breathing in and out a bit deeper a few times can really relax as well. And we can also work with the mind to relax. And the simplest way is, again, an invitation. You can say, oh, may the mind relax, and see if that does anything. Sometimes it will, sometimes it won't. Because what relaxation is actually, what it actually is an absence of unwholesome mind states. So when we experience those unwholesome roots, for example, greed, wanting, aversion, delusion, confusion, what I was talking about earlier, these cause all sorts of unwholesome mind states to arise, like wanting, attachment, frustration, despair, sadness, fear, anger. Whatever it is that we experience, if we experience any of those kind of mind states, then relaxation becomes a bit harder. Because when these mind states subside, then relaxation will automatically follow. So relaxation is about the absence of desire or aversion or confusion. So anytime you find yourself being not relaxed, you could ask yourself, like, oh, is there maybe desire, aversion, or confusion present right now? Is there anything I want different right now? Because if we're in contention with reality, it's really hard to relax. So when I was feeling tense about the cleaning, I couldn't relax. You know, I was feeling tense. I was aversive. You feel your whole body contracting. And then when that lets go, then there can be relaxation and there can be an ease in the cleaning. And that's a whole process, of course. It's not that when once we recognize, oh, I'm aversive or I'm stressful, that it lets go immediately. Sometimes it does. Sometimes just a simple recognition is enough. But sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes we need to see those patterns like over and over again. Just the recognizing of it is the first step. And this, of course, ties back into the mindfulness. And recognizing of what's happening is mindfulness. So mindfulness is the basis for the relaxation in a way, you can say. So with mindfulness, we can start to recognize, like, we can also start to see, like, oh, I am not relaxed right now. And indeed, there is aversion or wanting maybe in the mind. Or you can see, oh, I'm actually really relaxed and the mind is pretty wholesome right now. You can see, start to see that those things are related and connected. So that's what I wanted to say about relaxation. And then the third support is kindness. So as I said, I'd like to talk about kindness towards ourselves, even though kindness towards others is very useful and wholesome, of course, so fantastic also to practice kindness towards others. But I think for a lot of people here in the West, kindness for ourselves is a bit underdeveloped. Like, many of us are, you know, somewhat unkind towards ourselves. We experience self-judgment or self-hatred or self-loathing. These can be pretty strong patterns of the mind. And the Buddha says, hatred never ends with hatred. By love alone, it ends. This is an ancient truth. So sometimes we try to overcome these patterns of self-judgment or self-hatred with hatred, like, oh, I don't want this pattern. It needs to go away. But it doesn't really work, because then we're trying to end our hatred with hatred. And hatred is a little bit of a strong word. Aversion is kind of a milder form of hatred, you could say. So these patterns we can actually overcome by kindness towards ourselves. I would say that developing this kindness for ourselves is actually, for Westerners, often a fast track to more ease and more peace in our lives. And I do admit it's not easy to develop this. It can be quite a challenge. This, especially because these patterns can be of, for example, self-judgment can be very strong. But we all are somewhere in our practice, and we all have to start somewhere. So even if it's not easy and a lot of those kind of patterns come up, it's still worth it to incrementally try to practice this. I think that trying to cultivate the kindness will be beneficial for almost anyone. Even if you already feel kind towards yourself, you can always practice a little bit more. And if you imagine being kind to yourself, how would that influence like every aspect of your life? And there are several ways to do this, to practice this kindness towards ourselves. And the first one is very simple, that it would be just a simple intention. So we can have the intention to be kind, just the intention to cultivate kindness. Because intention shapes our mind and shapes the next moment, and the next moment, what I said with the conditionings of the moments. So it's a very powerful tool. I can use that in all sorts of settings, not only with kindness, but it can be very strong, a strong way to cultivate it, because the mind will start to direct us in that direction. Even though we might be miles away from kindness right now, it will give us just a direction. It's like trying to launch those big tanker ships, trying to change the course. You know, you might not notice it much in the beginning, but every tiny bit that you pull on the wheel is going to have an effect in the long run. So intention, we can use intention. And then the second way we can develop kindness is through using what is called metta meditation. And metta is one of the Brahma Viharas, the heavenly abodes. It's translated as loving kindness meditation. And I think most of you are probably familiar with metta meditation, but just to sum it up, it's a Buddhist meditation form that uses phrases to generate this heart quality of loving kindness. So we would express phrases, not out loud, but just in the mind, like a wish for ourselves. For example, may I be happy, or may I live with ease, or may I be healthy. And what I said about relaxation, we can start with relaxation if we do our meditation. We could also start with kindness. That is a choice. I mean, you don't have to do everything, but sometimes you can maybe start with relaxation. Sometimes you can start with some metta practice, with some wishes for yourself. And you can even try this in your daily life. Like, also, whenever you think about it, use a phrase. May I be happy? May I live with ease? I use it a lot during my daily life. Just when I feel a little bit down or something, I just realize, oh, I can do a little bit of metta for myself. Just a few phrases. And it sometimes just lightens the heart up right away. It's not like an instant cure for everything, but it can sometimes just give us a little bit more light in the heart whenever we need it. And then the third way to cultivate kindness would be to pay attention to when we are kind to ourselves and when we are not kind to ourselves. So this also would require some mindfulness. So being mindful of body and mind, state of mind. And also this is a learning process. We can learn and grow from those moments that we are not kind to ourselves. And we can see those moments over and over and over again, and we start to recognize the patterns that it comes from. And the mind might start to realize at some point that it's not that great to experience unkindness towards ourselves. The mind starts to realize that it's painful and unpleasant. And that's what I said about gaining wisdom. This, the mind recognizing that it's painful, is wisdom at work. And if wisdom starts to grow, then it might at some point steadily, slowly let go of these patterns, or just a little bit here and there. So wisdom can really work in the background. It's not something that we would easily see. For like, it's like with that big tanker ship. Like only when we are way down. Down the road, it's not really a road, but we're way down our path, we see at some point, oh, we've actually steered so much in the wholesome direction. Now I start to see that my path actually changed compared to where I came from. It is something that can be a very slow process, but at some point we might see some effects. Can be weeks, can be months, can be years. So an example that Sharon Salzberg gives, she's a metta teacher, Vipassana teacher as well, but she does a lot with metta. And she describes in her book on loving kindness that she once was on a retreat, a long retreat, and she was doing only metta for herself. And during that retreat, after some weeks or a month or so, I don't remember, she got a message that something was wrong at home, so she needed to leave the retreat early. And she didn't feel any metta. She had like sat all these weeks for nothing, she thought, because she didn't feel anything. And just this metta practice was just not working for her, she was thinking. So she was packing her stuff, and she dropped a bottle, and it just shattered all over the floor. And her thought was something like, "It's okay, dear." And she realized, wow, metta just came up for myself. And she just, like, before her retreat, she would never have thought anything like that. But now, the metta, even if she didn't notice anything during the practice, it had worked somehow. So we never know what happens in the background when we practice this kindness for ourselves. Maybe at some point we have a kind thought too. And of course, we can be aware of those moments that we're unkind towards ourselves, but it's also very important to see those moments that we are kind towards ourselves and really take those moments in, really savor the moments. Because if we savor it at any wholesome state, also with kindness, we really reinforce that state of mind. When we really, really enjoy it and feel it, then it can grow more. And that's not an ego trip at all. It's actually the building of a healthy self. And we kind of need a healthy sense of self before we can let go of ourselves. Like in Buddhism, we talk about the not-self aspect of life. But yeah, we need a healthy sense of self before we kind of can let go of ourselves. So this kindness towards ourselves is actually contributing to this aspect as well of not-self. It's very beneficial for a wholesome and free life. So that was what I wanted to say about kindness. And then we get to the last support for our practice for today, which is to return to the present moment. I'll quote the Buddha again. "Don't chase the past or long for the future. The past is left behind. The future is not yet reached. Right where it is, have insight into whatever experience appears." End quote. Like, how much of our lives do we spend not in the present moment? How much of our lives are we off into daydreaming about the future, or worrying about the future, or planning, or we're ruminating about the past, thinking about this fun vacation that we had some years ago, or this difficult conversation we had yesterday, or whatever it is. And of course, we do need to think about the future. We do need to make plans, like, else we wouldn't all be here, or we wouldn't have turned the computer on to look at the Dharma talk. So there is some use in, you know, thinking about the future or the past. But often, like, a big chunk of the time that we are lost in future or past, it's just this habit pattern of thinking. And it doesn't really contribute much to our lives. So being in the present moment and really experiencing this moment like what's happening right now in the body, what's happening right now in the mind, can be very skillful and can be very grounding and stabilizing. And if you think about it, like, is there anything, do you ever get anything else than this present moment? Not really, right? We always get only this moment, and this one, and this one. Our lives is just this flow of present moments, everlasting present moments. So even if we plan for the future, or if we think about the past, or worry, or want something, or have aversion towards something in the past or in the future, and the only thing we have is those worries or wants or feelings or thoughts in the present moment. And it's even if you think like, oh, I want, like, let's say I want a pizza right now. Like, you're never going to get that pizza in this present moment. It's always wanting to get something in the future. Once you get it, it's not this wanting anymore of this moment, if that makes sense. So it's important to recognize that we can't really escape this present moment, even though we're off in thoughts and about future or past. And this returning to the present moment is also a simple recognition, like, oh, I was gone. I was lost in the thoughts about the future or the past. So it also involves mindfulness again. And often when we recognize that, we are already back in the present moment. And next to that, we just see, oh, I was gone and now I'm back. We can also more actively tune back into this present moment. Like, we can check into what the body is right now. Like, oh, it's like this right now. There's maybe some tension here, or there's some softness there, or some warmth, or whatever it is. And we can tune actively into what's happening in the mind. And it doesn't have to be like this big elaborate investigation. It can just be a tiny moment in our daily lives, or if we're meditating, then we might do it a little bit more elaborately, tune back in the present moment and try to stay there. But in our daily lives, it might be just a moment like, oh yeah, the body is like this right now, or the mind is like this. You could try it even right now when I'm talking. Tune into the body, tune into the mind, the present moment sensations. Recognizing it's like this right now. So that's what I wanted to say about the returning to the present moment. And like what you can see throughout all these supports is that mindfulness is actually the basis for the other three supports. So we need mindfulness to recognize, is there any stress present? Is there an unwholesome mind state present? Or do I need to relax a little bit more? The first support, to relax. Or mindfulness can recognize, are we kind towards ourselves? Or is there some harshness or judgments in our minds? And mindfulness can help us to learn from these patterns and tendencies of harshness or judgment, and maybe eventually let go and cultivate some kindness. And mindfulness can recognize if we're off into future or past, and can help us remember to return to this present moment. And so if you have bandwidth for only one of those four supports, then you can pick mindfulness, because then you cover all of them, basically. And mindfulness is always useful, as the Buddha says. So, but you can also pick and choose or see which one resonates most with you right now or which one you feel like would be beneficial right now. Or what I do is I've written them down. I use a digital notebook and they're there when every time I open that notebook, they're there, clearly there, and I see them like several times a day. And then I remind, then it reminds me like, oh yeah, right, I was supposed to be mindful. Or I take this conscious moment to relax the body and relax the mind. I invite the body and the mind to relax. Or check in if there's any aversion or tension present. Or then I see the kindness reminder and like, oh yeah, I'm supposed to be kind to myself. Let's cultivate a little bit of kindness. And sometimes I'm really stressed out and, you know, my to-do list is right there and I'm like, oh, I need to do all these things. And like, oh yeah, kindness. Oh yeah, I can be kind towards myself. Or I consciously return to the present moment, seeing that reminder. Like, oh yeah, I only have to take care of this moment and then this moment. I don't have to think about like 4 weeks from now, just this moment. And of course, there are many other supports that we can use for our lives and our meditation practice. These are just four that I came up with that were very helpful and useful for me. And some other supports that you can think of might be like the other Brahmaviharas, compassion, joy, equanimity. Maybe support like acceptance or patience or impermanence might be useful. And so we all have different conditionings, different habits, patterns, and tendencies, and we all need different types of supports in different times. So we don't have to be attached to the four that I talked about today. Yeah, I just wanted to share that they've been helpful for me and how they can be helpful for you maybe as well. So the invitation is to discover for yourself what is supportive for you in your practice, in your life. And that might change over time as well. I'd like to end with a poem. It's by the poet and teacher Kaveri Patel. And the poem is called Dear You. Dear you, you who always have so many things to do, so many places to be, your mind spinning like fan blades at high speed, each moment always a blur because you're never still. I know you're tired. I also know it's not your fault. The constant brain buzz is like a swarm of bees threatening to sting if you close your eyes. You've forgotten something again. You need to prepare for that or else. You should have done that differently. What if you closed your eyes? Would the world fall apart without you? Or would your mind become the open sky, flock of thoughts flying across the sunrise as you just watched and smiled? Thank you for your kind attention. Thank you, and yeah, it's about time, so I'll stay here in case there's any questions, but otherwise there's you're free to go. Thank